WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A Virginia judge tosses out a challenge to transgender student protections. Virginia's Redistricting Commission is hearing from voters, and we share another local StoryCorps conversation today between two women who forged a friendship through a shared journey of grief and healing. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, July 29th. A circuit court judge in Lynchburg on Tuesday tossed out a legal challenge to policies designed to protect transgender students. Schools across the Commonwealth are required to adopt new protections under a state law passed last year. Ben Pavier with VPM reports.
The Virginia Department of Education put out guidance for school boards to help them come up with policies that comply with the law. Their model addresses issues like respecting trans students' gender identity. Conservative groups, including the Family Foundation, challenged the guidance, arguing in part that it infringed on teachers' and students' First Amendment rights. Jack Price teaches law at the University of Richmond.
What the court basically did is say, this is not the right vehicle for testing that out. Let's wait until a school district actually adopts a policy.
The policies have become a rallying cry for conservative parents, and at least one school board in rural Russell County rejected the state's model. Price says those local decisions will likely be the subject of future lawsuits. Ben Pavier, WMRA News.
Governor Ralph Northam is proposing a $485 million spending package to reduce pressure on Virginia's overcrowded and understaffed public mental hospitals. The spending package unveiled on Wednesday pledges almost $224 million to hire and retain staff in institutions. The Daily Progress reports that the proposal also includes federal funding for crisis services and treatment and support services for people with substance use disorders. The proposal also includes funding for the new Marcus Alert system to rely on mental health professionals instead of law enforcement to respond to psychiatric emergencies. The General Assembly will consider the one-time federal aid in its special session next week. The Virginia Redistricting Commission is about to start drawing new political boundaries for the Commonwealth, and they're hearing from voters, Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Members of the newly created Redistricting Commission are about to start drawing political maps for the House of Delegates, the State Senate, and congressional districts. They're also hearing from voters across Virginia about what they want to happen. During a recent public hearing in Northern Virginia, Chris DeRosa of Arlington told commissioners that Arlington has too many members of the General Assembly.
I would like to propose that Arlington be represented by fewer delegates and fewer state senators. Yes, that sounds strange, I know, but as much as I appreciate the service of all seven of our state legislators, that's four delegates and three senators, I think we would be better served with fewer legislators.
She says lawmakers would be more fully engaged with their constituents if they weren't spread out over multiple jurisdictions, a view shared by Mike Clancy of Fairfax County, who says there's no reason for the 11th Congressional District to stretch from Tyson's Corner in Fairfax County all the way out to Swans Creek in Prince William County.
We hear a lot of talk about voter suppression. These kinds of congressional districts are all about voter suppression, and they make the congressional elections totally meaningless.
Some have argued that localities actually benefit from having the largest delegation possible, stretching districts out across as many cities and counties as possible. Members of the Redistricting Commission will get to make those decisions just as soon as they get census data, which is expected in the next 3 weeks. Michael Pope.
Rural Virginians tend to be older than their urban counterparts. The median age in densely populated localities is about a decade younger than in sparsely populated ones. And that gap is growing. Connor Scribner with VPM reports.
The median Richmonder is around 34 years old. In Chesterfield and Henrico, median age nears 40, and in Powhatan County, it tops 45. The state's rural-urban age gap rose by nearly 2.5 years over the past decade. Hamilton Lombard is a demographer at the University of Virginia.
Rural localities attract a lot of older retirees. At the same time, suburban-urban areas, which are more expensive, are losing them.
Meanwhile, he says younger people move in the opposite direction, seeking job opportunities in metropolitan areas. The widening gap may become a problem for Virginia, which distributes funds for schools, transportation, and other essential services at the state level.
It gets harder to do that, I think, when you have localities with very different needs, with very different age structures.
But the pandemic may flip the trend if young people working remotely choose to move further from urban cores.
Connor Scribner reporting. An association that represents aging services organizations in Virginia released a statement this week calling on all staff working in the long-term care industry to be vaccinated from COVID-19. Leading Age Virginia told the Virginia Mercury that while the vast majority of residents have been vaccinated, only 69% of nursing home staff in Virginia have opted for the shots. CEO Melissa Andrews said, "The time for a mandate is now." Finally today, as part of WMRA's partnership with StoryCorps, we're sharing a conversation between Dolly and her friend Marla. They attended the same high school, but never really knew each other. In 2009, Dolly lost her son, Austin, who suffered from bipolar disorder. After reading his obituary, Marla wrote a letter that started a deep and lasting friendship.
I guess our friendship really began 12 years ago, as you know, with a letter. I remember walking back up the hill from the mailbox and squinting at the return address. I had no clue who had sent it.
Yeah, I didn't know you, but I knew you had to be devastated. And the obituary really grabbed my attention. It was so raw and brave, and yet you took this opportunity to help others understand the realities of mental illness. But I knew you had to be a wreck, and I just wanted to write you.
I didn't write you back right away. I have no idea what I could have possibly have scribbled. I was so torn up after losing my eldest son to bipolar disease.
I didn't even really know what to say, but I just knew I had to write you and give you hope. I knew that you felt like a shell of a person, and I just felt like you had to know that things would get better.
Well, you always roll your eyes when I say this, but Marla, you saved my life. When I wrote about my anger, you absorbed that frustration and shared in my bitterness. You read my tear-streaked words, and you returned messages, sharing in the sadness and loss that we all encounter in life. And I feel that you walked every step with me as I traveled through the valley of the shadow of death. When you lose someone that you love, you walk in their shadow a long time.
You do. You do. You walk a day at a time, an hour at a time. It was a pit of despair, but you climbed out. Just watching the change in you and seeing you come from that being someone who was so deeply hurt to someone that wants to be a healer. And it just makes me think that, you know, love can be simple. Love can be an apple pie. Love can be a sunflower. But why don't you tell us about the sunflowers?
Well, I personally would say love can come in the form of a letter out of the blue, but the sunflowers, oh my goodness, they were such an unexpected surprise. A neighboring farmer planted 20 acres of sunflowers in a field that the family owns near town, and we heard from scores of people that it brought them so much cheer to drive by the flowers on the way to town. So the family decided to allow folks to come pick as many blooms as they liked, and they just asked for a donation to the Austin Memorial Fund. The event was posted on social media, and it went viral. Apparently, Austin's obituary, in which his mental illness was so openly discussed, it just must have struck a chord. We had people coming from out of state. Now, I am usually very uncomfortable in crowds, but somehow this is different. People kept asking for me, "Where's Austin's mom?" They sought me out with their condolences, with hugs, with tears, and with stories of their own trials involving psychological illness. And they spoke about issues like depression, anxiety, anorexia, schizophrenia, bipolar. And for the first time in a long, long time. I didn't feel alienated or isolated. Listening to those stories helped me realize that mental illness is rampant and has such a bad stigma, it's just never discussed, not openly.
But that's what you guys did with the obituary. You gave mental illness a voice in your community, and the ramifications, people are still being blessed because of the early decisions you made to be open.
And I think the event created an atmosphere of acceptance and understanding for those who secretly struggle on an unseen battlefield. But you know I love Wendell Berry, so I would love to finish this with a great poem by Wendell Berry. I memorized this poem because I love it so much. It goes like this. I don't believe that grief ever passes away. It has its time and place forever. More time is added to it. It becomes a story within a story. But both grief and griever alike endure. Thank you, Marla. Love you.
Hey, Dolly. We'll talk again soon. Love you.
Dolly and Marla discussing their shared journey of grief and healing. You can read Austin's obituary and learn more about Sunflowers for Hope at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.